Today I'm with local hero, James Elliott. Just seen him looking like he's blushing a bit there, but he's a local hero to us at Heights. He's known as the Canoe River Cleaner, and his motto is, it's all about the flow. So welcome to Heights, James, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're more than welcome. And I just want to say congratulations. Across from me there's something that says Make a Difference Awards 2022. This is BBC Radio Humberside. Just congratulations on winning the Environmental Award at the Make a Difference Awards held recently. How did the night go?
Good. The Minster was lovely. It's a lovely setting, but it did rain prior. We was all suited and booted. And as you can appreciate, I dress accordingly when I'm out on the river doing what I do. So it was nice to get suited and booted. But then the heavens opened, which is the first time we've had a water shortage, haven't we? So, we haven't had much rain and the heavens opened. So that was the first thing, really. Everyone was drenched. But the whole night was brilliant. And it was a celebration of just everyone. It sounds cliche, but there was no winners and losers. It was just, look at everyone doing good things. You know, there's loads of us doing good things.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it all went. There was smiles. There was, you know, it was brilliant. In my category, I think with my... I guess my USP is the canoe, the draw that people are kind of, wow, this is different. So I kind of thought, maybe I've got this, unless someone else is doing it in a similar vessel. I've got this. But then there was a chap who was cleaning Spurn Point. He was cleaning the beaches of Spurn Point, which obviously cover half of our sort of wash as it goes out into the North Sea. So it's you can see all the feeder rivers will... drop the plastic and that goes out and it gives you a bit of an indication of the problem. What lands on Spurn Point, you know, gives you a bit of an indication of what's spilling out into the ocean. So so he was doing a brilliant work. And I was like, oh, I'm worried here. He's quite good. And then he says, yeah, I get on my dinghy and I paddle out from Hull Marina to Spurn Point. It takes me 3 hours and then I get my litter picking gear. So I'm like, he paddles for 3 hours to get to his litter picking. So I kind of thought
you were doomed.
I thought I was doomed from the start. Yeah, but kind of, it was full of people. They was all there because in their own right, they was certainly making a difference. Yeah, so collectively, yeah.
Brilliant. And I think, you know, yours is a fascinating story. It seemed from your website that, you know, so many people lost their way during COVID. Particularly, but you know, you seem to have found yours. You seem to have reconnected with nature as well, or use that time to reconnect with nature. And as you've already said, you bought a canoe. Who else did that in lockdown? Certainly not me.
Yeah.
And I just wonder whether you could tell us a little bit more about being the Canoe River Cleaner and how did it all happen? You know, when did it start? What's the story?
Going back, it's a bit of a blur. When we started in lockdown, the restrictions came. I subscribed to a wine club, which was nearly the beginning of an end, really. I think we kind of all did crazy things, and I thought we're going to be hunkered down here, so what do we do? And joking aside, I was on furlough for quite a long time.
Right.
And because we was restricted to, I can't really remember, really. I think it was kind of your local county, and then it became more restricted, didn't it?
Mm.
But as a consequence, I kind of thought, I don't know why, whether I was watching something on telly and I thought, I'm going to get a canoe. And it literally was that moment. And I think it's one of those things you see on films, you know, a big Canadian canoe and you think, that looks good. And then the moment disappears and you never see another guy in a canoe again for another 5 years until you watch an American film.
This is an open canoe, isn't it?
This is a Canadian canoe.
Proper Canadian
canoe.
Yeah.
One of those things that you think, oh, I'd like one of them. And then it, you know... But I acted on it and I bought it. And it was actually from this campsite, as it were. And it was, I think they taught brownies and scouts kind of outdoor. It was an outdoor pursuit centre. And because of COVID, they shut down everything. So they had a surplus amount of canoes. So I bought a canoe. And then I started doing some litter picking because I kind of thought, I've got to do something. I'm getting paid just to sit around and do nothing. So I started litter picking, and then there was a lot of items in my local river that I couldn't reach safely.
Right.
And then my wife actually said, why don't you just put your canoe on the water? I thought, ah, okay. And it, I didn't use that waterway for my canoe. It was a different waterway that I used. And I didn't really kind of walk our river in our local town. I live on the outskirts of town. So a lot of my walks that I did kind of was on the Lincolnshire Wolds or kind of Peak District, etc. And then because we was restricted, kind of was forced into town really. And then I discovered how beautiful our River Freshney was. And that's the beginning really of...
You say beautiful. I mean, how was it? Certain parts, I imagine, are beautiful, but obviously something must have made you think this needs cleaning, this needs work. Was it beautiful when you...
I saw a kingfisher. I don't know whether this was, again, because it's going quite far back. I remember seeing a kingfisher on a shopping trolley, and nature adapts, and you know, obviously, the higher up the food chain, the less they can be affected. Mm. Long term, obviously, they can be affected if there's no, there's nothing to prey on, there's no food. Yeah. But if there's a trolley there, it's a good point for a kingfisher to land on. But the whole thing was a little bit tragic.
In Louth, in the River Lud, I think they have a little stick, you know, that someone's submerged into the river, and I've seen a kingfisher on there, but here's a trolley. And so, but that juxtaposition of something very man-made, something very natural, overcoming, you know, the lack of something to land on, using it as a vantage point. How does that make you feel, though, at that point?
It's just the whole image of it. It was nice. Oh, kingfisher, and then shopping trolley. Yeah, it was a bit of a mixture of emotions, really.
Was that the trigger point? Was that the point where you thought, this something's not right here?
Yes, and that was the point where I kind of had to do something for nature as opposed to just making it look aesthetically pleasing. Because at first it was just get things out of the water. That was the first instance. And then I kind of thought, well, it will in turn affect nature. But as I say, a kingfisher will adapt, an otter will adapt. Mm-hmm. But at some point, they'll have nothing to prey upon. So
yes, I suppose that's the point, isn't it? They may be able to use a trolley as a vantage point, but if the water's not clean, one of your, you know, it's all about the flow, you know, and so on. You know, it may sound like a soundbite, but I guess you've seen firsthand what a river looks like when it's clean and when it's not.
Yeah.
And when you say it's all about the flow, I guess you mean, you know, the whole thing, biodiversity, sustainability, ecology and everything else, just it works or it doesn't work. And
as opposed to just water flowing down. You know, we often, a lot of people wrongly remove everything out of rivers. It's important that we do have natural obstacles. A tree will take, if a tree falls into the river, it will take on a different life. So that'll be habitat for certain creatures. The rivers, for want of a better phrase, can be canalized. Okay, so they can be straight. I paddle the river wide now and again because I found a campsite that's real nice, and that the route I go down is good and practical. But there's no marginal plants, the biodiversity isn't rich at all. And often you find that invertebrates and certain species use the litter that's in there because that's all they've got.
Right.
And interestingly enough, there was a study, I think it was, but don't quote me on this, Nottingham University, which found out that a lot of our invertebrates or species lower down the food chain were using things that are in the water because everything else was just straight. There was nothing there. It had all been cleared out.
So from
which was tragic as well.
Really? So from what you've seen, and I guess it's man that's it's us, isn't it, that have simplified these rivers? Have we
100%.
Changed? We've put concrete, you know, where there once was, you know, natural runoff or whatever it is. Have we done this?
Yes, but we do need to look at it practically. Obviously,
right.
We've got houses that sit adjacent to the river that we need to mitigate floods. So we've got our pumping station on the River Freshney, which is important because at the end of the day, people are important, and you don't want the houses flooding and properties, businesses flooding and things. So, but that does come at a cost. Of course, it's nice for the river to flow naturally out into the sea, and if it floods, it floods onto the adjacent farmland. But it's not always practical.
So it's about balance then, I suppose, finding that point of where where we can build our homes and so on, but where nature can thrive more. So maybe we've gone a little bit too hard in places. So is this where there's more talk of rewilding, for example?
Yeah, I think you've got your buffer zones on the that sit adjacent to the rivers as well, where historically, really, we utilise as much farmland as we can right to the riverbank. So it's about rewilding areas, farmers getting on board with that as well, as grants available. Yeah. And I think it is about balance, but it's kind of just about thinking a little bit more.
Yeah.
And we're a bit kind of late to the party, really. And I think so it is about kind of, it's like building companies thinking about how their fences sit as well, so that there can be safe passage for certain animals. And also when we had the pumping station, that's got a passage for eels and trout to actually come upstream as well. So I think that was fitted a little bit later on. Mm. So it is about just people kind of thinking a bit more about wildlife and biodiversity and how important it is.
When you say that safe passage really resonates with us, because as a Birdfoot company, we think about nature having to make its way, particularly with talk of climate change. So as climate changes, you know, the species may move on around the countryside or around, you know, the globe. So we like to think that our customers do an incredibly important job of their gardens, for example, act as stepping stones for nature to move about the countryside. Yes. And the more of these stepping stones that lock together, so the more people feeding the birds, they turn them into some sort of highway. And this safe passage, I read in a recent report on rewilding, really, from ZSL, who we'll be talking to next week, actually, if interestingly enough, a lead author on that. They talk about exactly that, I think they do anyway, which is, but it's more about this blue space the rivers offer to provide and support life. And you must be seeing that in a first-hand way, aren't you, really? I guess you've not been doing this a very long time, but you are out there every day.
Yeah.
So you're seeing things, you're seeing this turnaround, really, as you're clearing and making space for nature. It's coming back. And does it come back fast or fast-ish? Or?
I think it does, because everything's kind of seasonal. Yeah. So obviously the swifts and swallows and house martins have gone. So if we make provisions for when they come back, they've got a better habitat for when they come back, because obviously things are seasonal. So I think we can make a difference and see it turn around very quickly. What I do in the first instance is make our river that runs through our town clean in terms of litter and debris. You know, I don't make any claims that I clean the water. But what I feel I am doing is shining a light on how important it is to concentrate on a river and look at our river in a different way, because not every town has got a river running through, especially a chalk stream, which is, because of our geology, it's extremely rare. 80% of our chalk streams are in the UK, and we've got most of them on the Lincolnshire Wolds, because that makes up the Lincolnshire Wolds.
Right.
And then we've got our blow wells as well, which are even rarer still. So I think it's about, I think if anything, I've kind of shone a light on our river and made people a little bit more aware and hopefully taking a bit more care. And inadvertently that's got to help.
This is about shining the light and getting people to care. Sometimes you must feel like you're leaning on an open door with those who do care. But what about those who don't? What type of things are our rivers exposed to?
First and foremost, it's just litter, people throwing things in. I've seen, when I first started doing what I was doing, I remember this, and it's just tragic. I remember seeing a chap open his door, and bear in mind this chap's got our chalk stream on his doorstep. He opens his door, he's clearly got a new set of chest of drawers, marches out with his old set, chucks it in the river, turns round and goes back in again. And that's what I was faced with in the first instance. And I thought, if I challenge that person, then I'm going to get the whole thing off to a flying stop. That's not going to work for me. I'm not a believer in the way we communicate how to act. So it's very faceless. So we've got these signs up, don't litter. I saw one the other day, £50,000 fine for fly tipping, which is ridiculous. Mm. It's almost fairy tale thing. So
yeah.
So that doesn't work well. That's not good communication.
It's not working, is it?
No. So hopefully what I do, and this is why I make sure I post something on social media every day, it's got to have some sort of narrative. There's got to be some message there or something a bit different. But it's to hopefully make people think twice, inspire them. Again, I'm not claiming to have any superpowers, but hopefully I'll just make people think, oh, just maybe I won't do this.
Yes.
Because, you know, that guy's all right, what he does on the canoe. And no one's going to be eco-warriors. You know, I try to be that, but, you know, it's very difficult. But hopefully I do make people kind of think. But litter, it's not going to affect wildlife in the short term, just one can of Coke just sat in the river. But when you've got hundreds of people doing that, then it does make a difference.
Are we talking, you know, hundreds, you know, from what you've recovered from the river?
Yeah, when I first started, I would say an average canoe trip, which is predominantly in the West Marsh, because that's got houses either side, so there's a lot more footfall. We've got the Boulevard Park as well, so a lot of young school kids around there. And I would say every trip I would take 10 full bin bags of litter out of there, and a trolley, and a push bike, and a wheelie bin, literally every 3 days. And now it's got down to about 2 or 3, but still needs doing, and it's still important as well. We've got, obviously, you know, the Haven.
Mm.
For those people that don't know, we've got a pumping station to mitigate floods. So effectively, it becomes a dead end in the centre of town. Now, that has positive points because the litter's not just flowing out into the ocean or into the North Sea. So we can collect it eventually, but it is essentially a dead end. So the council operate in the town centre, but I try my best to stop the litter ending up there.
Yeah. Has there been a time where you thought, I can't keep doing this? You know, I can't pick another supermarket trolley out of the river. It's just...
No.
Really?
No, I've not. No, I enjoy what I do, and I think, how could I not? I'm on a canoe. You know, I've got my little flask of coffee. It's nice. It doesn't wear off. Admittedly, it was far more exciting when I first started. But no, I do enjoy it. It's downtime for me. I've spent a lot of my life in quite stressful jobs.
Mm.
So I never take it for granted. I'm out on the water. And at worst, you'll get an eye roll from me. Not another trolley. But that's it. I just crack on with it.
So it sounds, there's almost a therapy side to this.
100%. Really? Well, not 100%, 50-50 really. I would say, well, probably not even that. I do it for practical reasons, for the people that live and enjoy the river and the wildlife that call it home, first and foremost. But I think from a sustainable point of view, I do it because I enjoy it. Because, yeah, you can't do anything in terms from a financial point of view.
Mm.
It doesn't pay. There's no money in it. So it's got to have some other draw for me, which is just being immersed in nature, just being on my canoe and just having a relationship with the swans that I never had.
Yes.
They trust me now.
Yeah.
They didn't before, and that was scary.
I can see, just talking to you now, for, you know, others obviously can't, but I see your eyes light up. And it sounds to me like it's rekindled something that was there probably when you were younger, I don't know, and I imagine so. And I think that lockdown, that reset and so on, made all of us just stop the clock for a moment.
Yeah.
When others lost so much, and I suppose we all have in some way, shape or form, but you've really found something, and it's probably that reconnection with nature, and you're using that in a really positive way.
Yeah, I actually grew up on... I grew up on Hotney Clay, which is kind of on the outskirts of town. And then I moved into Wybers Wood, which sits alongside our River Freshney and the Freshney Valley. And that was back in the day as a 9, 10-year-old. regularly say to my mum at the weekend, can I have some packing up? I'm off out. And I'll be home for tea time. We wouldn't dream of that now. And I used to go off bird watching. And I think I knew a lot more then than I do now. You know, your learning curve is a lot less sort of kind of steep. Yeah. Back then, I kind of learnt a lot and I could name a lot of birds. Now it's just trying to remember it. And people keep, because I find myself, well, I do it on purpose, to be fair, surrounding myself with people that are very knowledgeable. Will Bartle from Lincolnshire Chalk Streams, my cousin Kevin, who runs the nature reserve at Gibraltar Point. And surrounding myself with these people, because I was kind of thinking, like, I'm on the river. I need to know a lot more. I need to learn a lot more to make sure I'm doing what I'm doing is correct as well. But yeah, I think it's that childhood thing that I always wanted. But then I think there was a lot of focus on getting a good job, good education, and money exists in the cities, and you've got to get a degree, you've got to get this, you've got to get that. I know it kind of didn't kind of work thinking about, oh, could I have a job in where wildlife's concerned? It was so I went down a totally different route. I just kind of went to college and got my A-levels, and then I ended up getting a job as a car valeter, and then gravitated towards car salesman and sales manager. And then it was getting further and further from my passion. Working 60 hours a week, I didn't have time to even have that as a hobby. So like I say, I don't take it for granted what I'm doing, and I'm enjoying every day.
It's funny, isn't it, really, how you can kind of, you know, get so far away from your first passions. But those early walks, and I think I did the same. You know, I remember leaving home, and although my mum always would worry where I was, you know, as you say, you'd arrive just before darkness, smelling of fires and all sorts of things that you'd been up to. Really, we were, I suppose, taking our early training as young naturalists and so on, you know, and learning about what it would be to be a nature detective and so on.
I think that's why, yeah, I'd like to think that's what my mum was thinking, rather than, you know, I'm not bothered where he is. But no, but I think it was, very much so. And it just goes to show our passion for nature, you know, to have that draw that you're out until the sun sets.
Yes. Yeah. You mentioned about your connection with, you know, experts, and I think it's brilliant to lean on people who know more and so on. You know, although I'm a big believer on, you know, some of our customers who feed and watch birds in the garden, that, you know, may not consider themselves ornithologists and so on, but are avian experts, but they know so much about bird behavior, and they can observe and they can tell you whether that bird looks poorly and so on, and whether the garden's right or not, or even just when things change the sound, if a sparrowhawk enters the garden or a cat and so on, they know these things. But I bet, even so, you know, it must be fascinating. You've had guidance from people who've had training, and so they must be picking up from you as well, you know, and thinking, here's somebody who's observing and very, very close to nature. You can't get much closer to nature, really, in a way, can you, than paddling alongside?
It's funny you should say that. There's a few organisations now that have reached out. I'm doing a water vole survey for Lincolnshire Chalk Streams. So Will Bartle, who works for Lincolnshire Chalk Streams, when he got that job to do that and needed someone to volunteer, and he thought, right, who's going to put the waders on and check for water vole droppings in the river? I know a guy who's passionate, who would like to do that. So it's coming back as well, which is great. So it's reciprocated. And yeah, you are right. They obviously seeing some sort of passion in me.
It's hard not to be fair.
Yeah, well,
that's
you.
What comes across. And that's why we were keen to have a chat with you, really. I mean, I'm wondering, what is it? Because all these things are really nice, you know, but there's obviously, in the end, there's an unglamorous side to this, isn't it? Where you are literally working hard to clean the river. You know, what does a day in the life of a canoe river cleaner look like? You know, what do you do? Where do you start? What time do you start? You know, when do you finish? just in case there might be listeners out there right now who are on Amazon looking to buy a Canadian canoe and thinking, I'm going to follow James.
I would say wait until the season kind of... Typically now is a good time to buy a camper van or a canoe. When people kind of go, oh, do you know what? That wasn't what I thought it was going to be like. Or, yeah, so it's a good time to buy something like that, I would say.
Well, you know, seriously, we need more naturalists and we probably need more people. We've got plenty of rivers and we probably need more people, I am sure, you know, like your good self, who are prepared to get out and about and, yeah, and stand up.
I think it's a safe way of, there's quite a, there's a slack handful of people that do river cleaning with canoes and kayaks and paddle boards. You've got to kind of do it in a safe manner. But obviously our river, because it wasn't, especially in the West Marsh area, it just hadn't been cleaned for years. Unfortunately, the council in it is a genuine excuse and a valid reason. They can't get their vessel underneath Alexander Road Bridge. And there's a little weir there as well. They can't possibly get their boat up there. So from a practical point of view, they do the haven. And that's why further upstream it was never really addressed.
Mm. You seem to have a close connection with, you mentioned the council, I think, a couple of times. So you're not coming at this from a perspective of, I'm doing it because they haven't, or, you know, they should be doing it, but I'm going to do it. You're in synergy with others, accepting that nothing's a perfect solution. But, you know, rather than point fingers and complain, you're in your boat, you're in your canoe doing something.
First and foremost, sort the job out.
Yeah.
And then figure out a way you can mitigate problems in the future. Get it done. Don't put your suit on, sit around a table and talk about it, because just roll your sleeves up and sort it, and then try and minimise problems in the future. That's what we should be doing, really. And there should be more, and that goes with a lot of sectors.
Yeah.
A day in the life, you mentioned.
Yes, please do, yeah.
So I'll pick a day, and it might not tally with kind of what you're saying. So I've got Lindsay's day. That's my wife. She goes out for the day, so I've got to take the kids to school. So that's first and foremost. So I get a tiny lay-in. I've got the River Freshney 9 till 1 o'clock, and I do both sides of the river on the West Marsh. So I'll do the streets either side, and I'll do the banks of the river as well. I've got a canoe trip to plan with a young chap that was reaching out for some help. From a mental health perspective. So, and then I'm doing some suicide prevention training. I have a walking group, and also I do, I'd say, kind of mindfulness canoe trips, kind of one-on-one canoe trips to help people with mental health problems, mild anxiety and panic disorders. And I've done a first aid course and a mental health first aid course. So little things that I can do without going back to college for years, hence the suicide prevention training, which I've decided to take. So that's my Thursday. Friday, I work part-time for Sainsbury's, and then I've got a nature walk with some children at Cleethorpes Country Park. And then I've got my Sunday off. I'm working Saturday as well. So I'm very busy. There's a lot of things I get involved in. And yeah, I'm very busy, but it's exciting. Yeah. But I stop one thing and then I'm off and doing another.
I feel very lucky to have you here today with that diary.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things though there that I want to kind of unpack a bit, really, because I think it would be amiss of me, really. Lockdown, reset, all these things. We've already talked about the positivity, the way you've turned this into something very positive. But, you know, I'm aware, and I think we're all aware, never have the words mental health been uttered more. But to almost quote you back, you know, it's not enough to just talk about these things. We've got to do something about it. You managed to kind of repackage what you're learning, and you're sharing what you're learning with others. And this is hopefully going to benefit people who are, you know, who are already struggling with mental health. You mentioned mindfulness. I mean, mindfulness is something that's, where was that, you know, 5-6 years ago? I don't know where it was, but now I know where it is. It's on the lips of my kids. I talk to them about mindfulness.
Yeah.
They've got two cures for things in life. One is mindfulness. Another one is warm water and salt. And they're my only two cures for anything generally. Tell me a bit more about that. How are you doing this?
I was in quite a stressful job, and I remember not being able to switch off. And I had a bit of a breakdown, a marriage breakdown, to be fair, whilst I was working as a car salesman. And I kind of hit rock bottom. And that's got really nothing in relation to my river cleaning, but I'm pleased where I am now and my mental health is good. But I do remember struggling because there was nothing available apart from your doctor saying, take these tablets and meditate. The only meditation, you had to sit like a Buddha and kind of be still. But when you've got constant chatter, that doesn't work. And then I discovered movement meditation, and that's the projects I get involved in. So my walking group that I have and my one-on-one canoe trips, it helps because it's not always possible for people to be able to remain still like the Dalai Lama and just be in the present. It's very difficult to get to that point. Now I can. I can sit there and within 5 minutes I'm asleep if I want to be. So, but to a lot of people it's not possible. So that's the couple of projects that I do, as well as my river cleaning, are the walking group and the one-on-one canoe trips. And people, when I'm paddling down the river and pointing out different wildlife, birds of prey especially, people don't get that perspective ever. There's lots of people I take out, they've never been on a canoe and certainly not seen the world around them on that level. Yes. So I'm out in the canoe every other day.
Yeah.
So whilst I say I don't take it for granted, I'm quite used to it.
Right.
But I've got to remember the first time I did it and how wonderful it was. And people are getting that experience.
Yeah.
And that's meditative, because after 2 hours of that, they've gone, do you know what? I want thinking about my mortgage.
Mm.
I want thinking about this problem. And they can take that with them, that experience. Yeah. So
I guess everything is very on demand, but and so we can call things when we want to. But it seems to me, from what you were just saying there, is that, you know, perhaps nature's got, you know, its healing powers are greater than we might imagine. You know, but you've got to get out there, you've got to submerge yourself in nature, you've got to take a moment. And that's really hard, isn't it? When you had the constant chattering of the world, of Instagram, of Facebook, of whatever it is, competition, paying the bills. But actually, if we can somehow take a moment, you know, to just be for a moment and just look around us. And have you seen that? I guess you've seen that with yourself, but firsthand, do you see it with some of your clients and people who step into nature with you? As you've already said, you know, somebody says 2 hours later, wow, you know, where did the time go? I suppose it feels relaxed again.
I mean, I have, I recognise that it kind of stops as soon as we get out the canoe.
Right.
But I've got I commissioned a local artist friend of mine who drew up some watercolour books full of positive affirmations and the picture of the canoe on, so people can take that away with themselves, have a cup of tea and remind themselves of the canoe trip.
I love it. It's all about the flow on the t-shirts. It's good that's going to
be... still got some left.
Some merch, is there?
there is some merch. I don't know. I had a bit of a narcissist moment, I think. Well, I've even got one that says the Canoe River Cleaner in big letters on the front. I've still got lots of them left, and quite rightly so. I don't know what I was thinking.
We'll put a link in the podcast to those.
I've got a few left.
Yeah, we'll put a link.
But no, I do see that. My walking group, I do it for free, the walking groups. We map out the walks. We provide free refreshments, and we embrace our Lincolnshire Wold. It's stunning. We do river walks on Lincolnshire Wolds as well, 52 weeks of the year. Currently, we're starting our walks. We start them at 6:30 every Monday night, and they finish about 8:30. So we don't change in the winter. So they start in the dark. We put our head torches on, and they finish in the dark. And last Monday, or the Monday just gone, we did a walk from Ashby cum Fenby, which is a village in Lincolnshire, to Grainsby, and back again, they're all circular walks, which is about 6 miles. And we had 50 people turn up. So week in, week out, on average there's 35 people each walk. So that's 35 people 100% benefiting from just getting out, gossiping, crying, laughing, exercising, whatever. And even if you're not stressed, I think that if you recharge your batteries, you've got enough in the pot for when a stressful moment happens and you're able to deal with it and shake it off and think, wow, I dealt with that better than I thought I would. Yeah. It's like, yeah, because you're just getting out there.
Absolutely.
You? So that's important. So they...
And sorry, how do people contact you if they want to?
Well, my separate company, I sound like I'm successful here, but it's a not-for-profit community interest company. So that's called All Things Good and Nice. And that can be found on Facebook or Instagram. And they just like the page. And then every week I put up the next walk or the next canoe trip and people can get involved. And I open not the walks necessarily, but definitely the canoe trips because it's one-on-one canoe trips. Mm. And I want them to count. So I don't ring my friend Dave up, who's relatively well-adjusted mentally. It's more people that can benefit from going out.
Well, that sounds a great cause. We'll get Ed, who's our producer, to put a link in to that Facebook page as well. You mentioned children, and I did notice online that you're running a campaign to encourage us to leave our bread in the bread bin. I mean, that must be. I mean, what is public enemy number one? Bread's got to be right up there, right? I mean,
yeah.
Is it important that people leave the bread at home and not take it to the park, or is there a place for bread?
There's no place for bread.
Right.
Absolutely no place for bread. I think it's a generational thing. There's experts that say there's no proof. There's still experts out there, in inverted commas, that think that burning fossil fuels doesn't drive forward climate change. But until we know it 100%, shall we just not drive about as much? Shall we just not chuck all this bread in? Why don't we just try and feed the birds correct nutritional food whilst we work out whether bread is harmful or not? Because we know it's not great. We don't feed our kids mashed potato every night. It's not going to kill the kids, but it's not going to be great for them.
It's not a balanced diet.
Yeah. So I don't sign up for this. It's okay. In the depths of winter, when there's absolutely nothing left and you're at a park where the ducks, swans and geese rely on humans giving them food, then chuck them a loaf of bread, chuck them 10 loaves of bread if they need it. But why would you not have some oats or sweet corn in your cupboard as much as bread? So I don't think there's really any excuse for it.
Right.
I don't. Yeah.
So a common starting point for people with their children would be to go to the park, go to the river, feed the
and local. That's brilliant.
So that's something you definitely, you know, you're 100% behind that. But when they do go, just maybe think a little bit more, leave the loaf at home, invest in, I mean, you know, anything, as you say, those even oats in the pantry and so on, anything like that would be better than just throw in loads of bread.
I think it's important that we feed them correct food. And even if you haven't got the money to buy a quality food, which I hope you give me at the end of this podcast as well. Thank you very much. I think it's important that we do feed them the right food, but it's just about changing people's mindset. What I do when I'm on the river now, the conversation's a lot better when you've got something to trade with someone rather than waving your finger at someone. So I'll give them some bird food and say, look, how about you give me that loaf of bread and I'll give you this. And then suddenly the conversation is a lot better. But there is instances where I've seen an elderly gentleman or an older chap with his grandson feeding the swans bread. I'd leave them well alone. You know, that's awesome to see. You know, and they're having that special moment. So I won't embarrass anyone there. I'll just go past. Or if I've got some food, I'll just chuck them that and say, try this. But there's certain instances I don't do. Hence my new kind of project that I'm trying to roll out. But also, apart from some of our parks, I don't think it's important to feed the ducks or swans anything. They forage for insects and duckweed and they need to do that action.
Yes, that natural enrichment of foraging. And,
yeah.
And that's all part of keeping the water right, isn't it, really, I guess? You know, if in a way we're throwing the bread in because the water isn't clean, isn't whatever.
We need them to be eating the duckweed rather than it gathering at the... So I think people just feel they need to feed them because they've got nothing else. So a lot of people, it's coming from a different place, really. They think they're doing good when in actual fact they're not. But at the same time, you've got to recognise that. So you don't want to go up and just say what you're doing is wrong, because the very action of what they're doing is right. But it's just about providing them with different solutions to it. But I think, we need to be feeding them less, even if it's correct food. We need to be feeding them less.
What's coming across as well, it's this interesting thing I hadn't thought of before, is that you've had to become part of this community, haven't you? You mentioned about trading on the river, you know, and when I think of all these early settlements and so on, that's where you're going back to, you know, this is where we came from, this trading process. I think maybe what we should do as Haith is give, if you've got space in the canoe, is give some where you can hand out a few bags. No, you use this rather than that and so on.
That would be that great, yeah.
We'll do that, definitely. But I love this idea of you trading on the river. This is it's fantastic.
It's a better conversation that comes about from,
isn't it,
giving someone something.
And you're using your skills from your
salesman.
Exactly.
I sell them the fact that they shouldn't be given. But it's just about how you approach. And it does take a skill, because that conversation can end very quickly if you don't approach it in the right manner.
You could be I'm thinking that the person could be a canoe river cleaner and they could be a very grumpy soul. And you couldn't understand why they would be a very grumpy soul, because they're removing somebody else's rubbish.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you're not, you know, you've become part of this community. You're using the skills that some of them you were given and some of them you've had to hone, and lots of them you've had to develop and work on, and you're using them for good. And I think that's brilliant.
It's easy to be an angry litter picker, and I think by default you are. You just, I'm going to clear up this mess. I'm a bit similar at home. My wife is, she's not dirty. It's not, that's not the word. She's a lot, there's a lot of clutter around our house.
She will be listening, you know, I'm sure.
That's fine. But no, she doesn't mind a little bit of clutter.
Right.
She's very busy. We've got two children. Our eldest lives out, but sometimes we have a grandchild. So we've got a busy house.
You may be spending more time in that canoe than...
maybe. So it's both our problems, I think. She doesn't mind clutter and I hate it. So I'm coming in all the time trying to clear everything up. So I do understand that when I come home and I'm, what's all this mess? What's this? So I'm guessing that's the mind of a litter picker when he's out there, you know, I'm sick of all this mess, and grabs a litter picker, because I know a lot of people do that, especially in kind of retirement or semi-retirement. They're sick of all the litter and they go out chuntering.
The interesting thing though is, I'm looking at your award that's on the table here, and it does say Make a Difference Award. It does not say Litter Picker of the Year. And that's the thing, that I think you could clean the river, but that wouldn't necessarily mean you've made a difference. I think you're making a difference in the river, of course, but you're actually making a difference in the community. And that's what this is about, really, isn't it? Really, this environmental award is not just about cleaning up behind people. It's about getting stuck in a really unselfish way.
I think I just recognise that if I don't kind of spread awareness or draw attention to it or spend time on social media showing what I've done, what the river, how beautiful the river is, how we need to look after it, then I'll just be doing this until the day I die. The same amount of rubbish. And eventually, for want of a better word, it'll get a bit boring and I'll be sick of it. So I am trying to make a difference.
How long can you go on for? How long will you keep doing this for?
Well, I'm only 22. So, no, I'm not, I'm 46. So, well, yeah, there's definitely a shelf life, really. So, but straight off the bat, I wanted to stop people, well, make the river a focal point, because it's just amazing that, and the river, we've got a really rich biodiversity. Even just running through our town, it's amazing what I see. And right from the onset, I wanted to remove litter out of the river, but also stop it going in there in the first place. And that's only going to work by hopefully inspiring others.
Yeah. Do the locals pay much? You know, do you have people that you travel down the river and there's John there, there's Steve, you know, the people who say, you know, I'm watching this bit here, you know, I've got your back. So are there people who've become part of your tribe, or maybe you part of their tribe, or is it always a challenge?
In terms of help that I get?
Yeah.
Or, well, I started, this was one of the other things I started when, this is probably after about 6 months of doing the river, when we opened up and we could engage with people. You know, so I started walking the river a lot more. I got a little bit of notoriety. People was messaging me. And to help give the river the attention it deserves, because I can't be everywhere, I split the river up from Alexander Road all the way up to more or less its source, which is a bit further back from Laceby, but then it's quite narrow and small. And I split that up into five sections, and we've got two people to each section, so a pair of litter pickers to each section. We've got a central hub where people say, litter pick the Wybers Wood area, there's a trolley there, or you need to get your canoe out because there's things in the centre of the river. So that really, really works. And that was a project I did that lasted about 6 months, but it's obviously carried on.
Yeah.
And yeah, you do get people. There's a lot of people on the West Marsh, that quite old fashioned people that I see coming out with a broom and just making the front porch look nice, which is, there's still people like that that exist, and they come out and help out. And it can be a bit dangerous, because what you don't want is people falling down the banks.
Right.
And I can't get three or four people on the canoe helping me. So
you need a bigger boat.
I do need a bigger boat, yeah, yeah. But it is a solo pursuit.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah. And what's the strangest thing you've dragged? You know, I've got pictures of a trolley, but for some reason, unfortunately, I think we all know what that looks like. We've all seen them in our ponds, in villages. You've mentioned Ashby and Fenby and so on. I mean, I know personally, you know, Ashby and Fenby used to have a nice little pond. And these things either dry up, they're misused, they're not used at all. Used to be a village pond everywhere. Where have they gone? Mm. You know, so what's the strangest thing you've pulled out of them?
I can't really say. I can't say, but what I will say is the third strangest thing, which was a car bonnet from an Escort. So yeah, that's the third strangest thing that I've pulled out, and the other two I can't really mention.
Right, okay. I think we'll have to use our imagination for those.
Exactly, yeah.
And what do you do with it? What do you do with this stuff? You know, where do you put it all?
It all goes in the canoe. So if you go on to
the bonnet. In the canoe.
Yeah, it's obviously, I don't know the science behind it, but whether the weight is absorbed by the water, you can pretty much manoeuvre it and lift it out. As soon as it comes out of the water, it becomes heavy. And obviously, if you feel the true weight of the item you've taken out. So you've got to be careful, because it will come out quite quick. Then you put it on the side of your canoe and you can nearly tip up. Yeah. So it's a balancing act. But I've learned to kind of gauge what things weigh now. But they all go on the canoe, and then I use North East Lincolnshire Council. They come and collect my waste within about an hour of me taking it out, which is brilliant. I've got one of the guides on speed dial, much to his annoyance. And I'm like, I've got some more rubbish. And to be fair, they come and get it. I also use a local waste management company called Lilliput Waste Disposal. And they come and get any debris that I've got.
Fantastic. Yeah, let's have a kind word for them. Okay, James, can I just come back to, I think before I let you go, because I know you're a very busy man and that canoe is calling, I know that. But one thing we're, Haith's really invested in is that legacy and education. We've been around since 1937, 80 odd years of doing what we do. And we're about trusted bird food. And the reason Haith's was founded was because the founder wanted to find clean bird food, super clean bird food. That's what we still do. But that bread project, to me, the anti-bread project in a way, sounds like something you're going to be spending a lot of time on. But I know this has been done before. People have tried this before. So what are you going to do that's different? What are you doing different?
I'm adopting something a little bit more modern, but I'm still probably 10 years behind everyone else when it comes to technology, using a QR code that I've just discovered how to work a QR code.
Right.
And I'm really excited about it. And my wife just rolled her eyes and says, you know, get with the program. But signage can get damaged. And I want to basically draw attention to the impact of white bread on our rivers, as well as wildlife. We have a problem with algae blooms as well because we have a pumping station, so the river collects in the Haven as opposed to flowing right out to sea. So we get to see these blooms in all their glory, unfortunately. So it is important that we kind of stop overfeeding them, mainly white bread. So I decided to do something on my website and share it with others, but it was becoming quite tedious because there's people not reading emails. They don't do as much anymore. And also getting that message out to everyone was quite difficult. So I decided to walk the full length of the River Freshney, stop off at various points where people feed the ducks, take photographs of them, submit those areas to the council, and they then say, how about we have some signage in terms of a QR code? So my plan is to put signage such as a metal plaque with a picture of a duck, and it will say scan me underneath with a QR code. That QR code goes straight back to my article about what to feed and what not to feed the wildfowl on the waters. And again, it's that kind of gentler approach as opposed to going up and
we love it.
Wagging your finger, yeah. Because often people don't respond to that very well, and they're just going to carry on. So it's the QR code on the plaques. I've just had our local council come back. They've checked all the sites. They've agreed that all the sites are council owned. So they've given me a thumbs up, which is brilliant.
Fantastic.
Slightly unexpected. I kind of thought, you know, they're really supporting me on that.
Good for them.
I've got Black Row Engineering, a local engineering company, who are designing the plaques. And then I'll just have the task of how to put them in place.
Yes.
Which I've not
thought. Heads will help you with this fresh is best message, because it's we're on this. You know, we tried this years ago with Bilotti and, you know, leave your loaf at home and so on. So we'll be happy to support you with some good quality bird food. But, you know, it strikes me that this must be a continual challenge, really, for you. I love the QR codes. I think that's brilliant. But the Canoe River Cleaner cannot do this on his own. You must have sponsors. It's got to be people sponsoring you. I think you mentioned sponsors before. And I can tell, you know, it's always a challenge, isn't it? You know, do you mention your sponsors? Do you not? Well, I think you do, because your sponsors, I imagine, are people who care about the environment. And if the people care about the environment, you know, we want to hear about them. So who's behind you? Who's supporting you?
I've got quite a few sponsors, quite a few good local companies that have got behind me. Can I name a few?
You can, of course.
I'll rattle them off as quickly as I can. So I've got Navigo, Lilliput Waste Disposal. I've got North East Lincolnshire Council, Black Row Engineering, Reed Motor Group, Tor Engineering, Brian Plant, E-Factor and Data Plan. And I've also got, which is the craziest, Soda Folk, which is a national soda company. They've got a slogan, good soda for good folk. And just a quick backstory, they look at people that are doing good things in their community. If you're lucky enough, you get a visit by them, a small amount of money and a mention on the website. When I turned up in a lay-by, it literally was a lay-by that were a pre-arranged meeting point to meet with one of their marketing personnel. She said, we're going to be closely followed by the director of the company. And he turned up and had a surprise for me, that he was so kind of inspired by what I do that he said, how's about we have you on the one of our cans of root beer, which is my favourite soda. It just happened to be my favourite soda.
Fantastic.
Which is great. So now I've been immortalised on this can.
Yeah.
And it's crazy, but also, you know, it's really rewarding. So, yeah.
It's really fitting. And it shows your story is, it not only is it being amplified, but it's resonating with people who care, you know, and I think that's why we invited you here. We'll put a link to the Soda Folk and the root beer in the podcast as
well. It's got me on the front. I mean, I don't know if they've done my chin justice, or I think they've gone a bit over the top with that. I don't think.
Well, I'm just looking at it now. I think that's how you expect a rugged canoe
I'll
ribbon.
I'll take rugged
to look. Exactly,
I'll take rugged.
Exactly. I think that's brilliant. So we'll put a link in the pod. I'll get our producer to do that. James, I think all that I need to say really is just, you know, thanks for coming to see us. We really appreciate you spending your time with us. It's been a pleasure. We wish you well. Let's keep in touch. We'll get our fresh bird food ready for when you're ready to educate. We're ready to help you achieve that, and we hope to hear more from you.
Thank you. Thank you.